Today I'm going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 5, beginning with chapter 5, text number 7. Srila Prabhupada, when he gave lectures in New York in 1966, generally he never read one verse, he read a series of verses, and then explained them a little bit at a time. But then we don't have so much time to read so many verses, but I'll start with text number 7. Karma Yoga, Action, and Krishna Consciousness. Yoga yukta vishuddhatma vijitatma jitendriha sarabhutatma bhutatma korvanatma nalipite. One who works in devotion, who is a pure soul, and who controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a man is never entangled. When Srila Prabhupada gave the 1966 lectures, there was no Bhagavad Gita at that time by Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, his lectures were the purports to the verses. So here, I'll just read a little bit of the purport. One who is on the path of liberation by Krishna consciousness is very dear to every living being, and every living being is dear to him. This is due to his Krishna consciousness. Such a person cannot think of any living being as separate from Krishna, just as the leaves and branches of a tree are not separate from the tree. He knows very well by pouring water on the root of the tree, the water will be distributed to all the leaves and branches, or by supplying food to the stomach, the energy is automatically distributed throughout the body. Because one who works in Krishna consciousness, servant to all, is very dear to everyone. And because everyone is satisfied by his work, he's pure in consciousness. Because he is pure in consciousness, his mind is completely controlled. Because his mind is controlled, his senses are also controlled. Because his mind is always fixed on Krishna, there is no chance of his being deviated from Krishna, nor is there a chance that he will engage his senses in matters other than the service to the Lord. He does not like to eat anything which is not offered to Krishna, and he does not wish to go anywhere if Krishna is not involved. Therefore, his senses are controlled. A man of controlled senses cannot be offensive to anyone. One may ask, why then was Arjuna offensive in battle to others? Wasn't he in Krishna consciousness? Arjuna was only superficially offensive because, as the Arabian explained in the second chapter, all the assembled persons on the battlefield would continue to live individually as the soul cannot be slain. So spiritually, no one was killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Only the dresses were changed by the order of Krishna, who is personally present. Therefore, Arjuna, while fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, was not really fighting at all. He was simply carrying out the orders of Krishna in full Krishna consciousness. Such a person is never entangled in the reactions of work. Krishna is explaining here, as he explains in many places in the Bhagavad Gita, that Krishna is actually the dearmost to everyone because Krishna is a reservoir of pleasure. He has unlimited love and affection for every living entity. And in contact with him, one not only sees everyone and everything in relationship to Krishna, that there's nothing that's not related to Krishna, but one also experiences unlimited, uninterrupted, transcendental love and happiness. So that's what everyone's looking for. No one does anything to make themselves miserable. Everyone does everything hoping to either avoid misery or make themselves happy, or others happy. When Vidura came back from pilgrimage, Vidura, a great devotee of Krishna, came back from pilgrimage, and Maharaj Yudhisthira greeted him. This is after more than 30 years of traveling in India, going to the holy places. Maharaj Yudhisthira greeted Maharaj Vidura with these words, Bhavan Vidas Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhutak Swayam Vibho Tirtha Koravandi Tirthani Swantak Stena Gatabritaha. That saints like yourself, they're verily holy places of pilgrimage. Because wherever you go, you turn that place into a place of pilgrimage because you carry Krishna within your heart. In other words, the actual duty of a devotee or an aspiring devotee is to put Krishna within their hearts, so that when Krishna is in the heart, from the heart, his love and his affection for him and his devotees, and also putting Krishna in the heart means to put Krishna's devotees in the heart also, especially Krishna's devotees such as Srila Prabhupada and our disciples of succession and the six Goswamis and the Panchatattva, which open our hearts to the spiritual world of Krishna's pastimes. So with all that transcendental family in one's heart, one broadcasts the transcendental atmosphere. That was most notable with Srila Prabhupada. If you read the remembrances of Srila Prabhupada, many devotees had the experience that in Srila Prabhupada's presence, they felt they were actually in the spiritual world. They were submerged in the transcendental energy, and therefore they were in a different state of consciousness. They were in spiritual consciousness to greater or lesser extent. And what to speak of the person who is emanating that transcendental love and transcendental happiness. So that's our job. We don't spread Krishna consciousness because of our great architect so far, architecture. And even if we have fantastic architecture, so what? There's so many buildings, there are so many museums, there are so many cathedrals. Oh, we're just adding to the buildings. Of course, it's not that we're not interested in getting nice buildings, because nice buildings would also make it attractive for people to come and hear about Krishna. But the essential thing is to hear about Krishna and to teach others and ourselves how to put Krishna within our heart. It's a process. Beginning with, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, coming to the platform of liberation. Coming to the platform of liberation. Liberation from the material concepts of life. Misidentifying ourselves with these great, gross and subtle bodies. Doesn't happen automatically, but just by executing the hearing, the chanting, the remembering of Krishna, etc., gradually we all come to that platform again. It's not some extraordinary platform that only one or two persons in this universe can come to. It's the very purpose of human form of life, that anyone who takes the human form of life, especially when they're fortunate enough to take it, after the advent of Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, everyone is supposed to come to that platform. That's what the human form of life is meant for. And if we don't come to that platform, then it's a great loss. Or we're supposed to come to the platform where Krishna reveals himself and our relation with Krishna is revived again eternally. To come to that platform requires, first of all, we understand we have to get out of the material concept of life. Somehow or another, the soul feels quite comfortable living in the material world, although he's suffering all the time. We're all suffering all the time. But one drop of water in a desert is taken as a great festival. Come and get the one drop, so much advertisement. Maybe in Christmas you got two drops. And in New Year's, you got three. Because I don't know what kind of drops people usually got, but, you know. In any case, whatever drops we got, there's an ocean of happiness that Prahlad Maharaj says that whenever he thinks about Krishna, he emerges into an ocean of happiness. And we should dive in along with him. And there's a big ocean. And we're invited to do so. But first we have to become liberated. And to become liberated requires some kind of vision. That's what Bhagavad Gita is meant to give us, some vision, some path. And along the path, it tells us what the different steps are so that we can see if we're going forward on that path or if we're going backwards on that path. For instance, in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, text number 28, Krishna says, Yesham antikatam papam jananam punya karmanam te dvandva moha nirmuktva bhujante mam rida vrataha. That those who have yesham antikatam, those who in previous lives have performed pious activities, whose sinful activities are completely eradicated and free from the duality of delusion, can engage themselves in my service with determination. So that determination, that is using our senses, our mind and our intelligence and our faith and our refuge completely in Krishna's service, that's what all these instructions are meant for, to teach us how to do that and inspire us to do it. Because after we do that, then when we meet Krishna, even to a certain small extent, and we start falling in love with Krishna, no one has to give us any more instructions. It becomes spontaneous. Just like if you go near an ocean, if you're traveling along and you find an ocean of nectar, and you find a little stream near the ocean of nectar, and you take a drop of that stream, then no one has to tell you to follow that stream until you get to the ocean. You'll automatically do it. Matter of fact, if someone tries to block you away from the ocean, they'll get into a fight. Similarly, once we come to the platform, gradually coming to the platform of liberation through the process of Krishna consciousness, then the result is it becomes progressively more enlivening and enlightening. And therefore it becomes more and more encouraging, not only to follow the path, but to become more serious about it. Because as we get a higher taste, then one becomes detached from anything that draws the mind away from Krishna. Therefore, the beginning, which is usually the most difficult, and generally Krishna is very kind, he encourages us in the beginning, which has two sides. One of that, if we get a little transcendental experience, then we think we're pure devotees, that we're God's gift to the Hare Krishna movement, that because we're present in it, it's becoming purified. Until we suddenly realize, or gradually realize, that we're not completely pure devotees yet. We still have to follow the principles. Therefore, Prabhupada said, generally the beginning is that one avoids sinful activities. Sinful activities are the very basis of our suffering. It's because we perform sinful activities, whatever we call sinful activities, anything that causes us to forget Krishna, of course, the four regular principles, if we break them, that will very strongly impel us to forget Krishna. But also overeating, atyahara, over-endeavoring, this is also what will help us, will cause us to forget Krishna. Therefore, to avoid these things, and then when one is a little steady, one can chant Hare Krishna without much problems, and one is able to follow the regular principles of freedom, as Krishna says, then naturally we want a nice, happy life in the material world. Because we learn how to cook nice prasadam, we can sleep peacefully, we understand fresh air is good, and we have our relationships, we try to improve them, therefore we try to have a nice material existence in Krishna consciousness. So that's good. That will give us some appreciation for Krishna and the process, but it will not stop the process of birth, death, old age, and disease. We may come back in a nicer place. We may come back in the heavenly planets and have a little vacation before we come back to Ljubljana. The problem is if we have a vacation in the heavenly planets for too long, and we come back at the end of Kali Yuga, even to Ljubljana, and we see little people greeting us. Welcome for the Sunday feast. You're on the menu. It may not be the most encouraging thing in our Krishna consciousness. Therefore, one should try to understand that even a nice, happy material life is still a material life. And therefore, one should try to go on hearing about Krishna, hearing about what is the superior existence of the spiritual world, cultivate transcendental knowledge, so that one can gradually actually come to the platform of absorbing the mind in Krishna, and therefore becoming completely liberated from the material concept of life. Therefore, in the next verse, Krishna says, Naiva kinchit garomiti yuktam manyate tatvavit pashan srinvans vishan jigran ashnanga chans vavansvasan pralapan vishvijan grinanu mushanam mushanapi indriyarnyarteshu partante iti darayan. A person in the divine consciousness, although engaged in hearing, seeing, hearing, smelling, breathing, opening and moving about, sleeping and breathing, always knows within himself that he does nothing at all. Because speaking, evacuating, receiving, opening and closing his eyes, he knows that only the material senses are engaged in their objects and that he is aloof from them. That's liberation in Krishna consciousness. That's not perfection, but it's certainly better than this identification with this body and all the miseries that come along with it. And if you're not feeling any misery, don't worry. In a few years, my words will become a realization. As you get older, the body doesn't get younger. And for as far as I understand, no one has ever died healthy. We may think, if I simply do my exercises, take my vitamins, fast on Ekadasi, then I'll be healthy. And even if I die, at least I'll be healthy when I die. But that's not the purpose of life. You know, they have a little marker for you, wherever it is, and it said he died, but he was healthy when he died. So it wasn't so bad. Now the purpose is to go back, is to die in Krishna consciousness, to leave this body in Krishna consciousness, so that we go to the spiritual world, hopefully, or at least we join Krishna, or come back in the family of devotees. So that takes a certain amount of detachment, which is explained here, that the perfection is if one is absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then one will see the material world in a different way than we presently see it. All this concern about what's going on in the material world and how people are, you know, what is our future and what is our past and what can we get and what did we lose, becomes insignificant. Because the material world is seen as it actually is. It's just a combination of different manifestations of Brahman in the form of earth, water, fire, air, ether, and mind, intelligence, and false ego, just manifested in different ways. The same energies, whether now or in 5 billion years from now or in next life of Brahma, it's the same 5 energies, just taking different forms. One form we think is attractive, another form we think is unattractive, but it's the same energy, just taking different forms all the time. So when it seems like that and sees Krishna within his heart and the spiritual world and the loving pastimes between Krishna and his devotees, he understands that, yes, we have to help these people who are suffering. We have to do something for my family, for my community, for myself. But actually what we have to do is help them become Krishna conscious and solve all their problems, not just some superficial problem. If someone's asleep and they dream that a tiger is biting them and they're screaming, oh, the tiger is biting me, and out of compassion someone says, don't worry, I'm coming, and he falls asleep and he enters into the person's dream and he kicks the tiger. Leave him alone. Kick the tiger till the tiger goes, arr. But it's a dream. And if the tiger's not going to bite you, some other animal's going to come along and bite you in your dream. But the person who shakes the person up, shakes him and or loudly calls the name of Krishna and wakes the person up, then he realized there was never any tiger really. I wasn't in danger. I wasn't going to be eaten because I wasn't that body that the tiger was so-called eating. Similarly, this body that we have, which we identify, it's changing all the time. And generally speaking, everyone usually winds up getting another one pretty soon. Now, everyone is thinking that if we can avoid death, everything will be all right. If we can live as long as a tree does, then our life will be successful. Therefore, everyone's concerned with trying to take care of the limited, trying to get out of the problem, get out of birth, death, old age, and disease, but without understanding it's impossible. That we haven't made any advancement towards that since we've been here, since time immemorial. Just like I said, one time Prabhupada was in London and the reporters came and they asked Srila Prabhupada, they said, Srila Prabhupada, that we heard that in India that people are dying all the time. So Prabhupada said, you're right, people are dying in India. But I've also been in London for some time and I've heard that people are also dying here. As a matter of fact, the statistics in India are alarming. The death rate there is 100%. But also, they've done some statistics here in England, and they found out the death rate here is also 100%. So with all the advancement of technology and industry, they haven't reduced it even a fraction of a percent, the death rate. True, you could go into a hospital and you can die with all kinds of modern equipment and every artifice of your body. So that way you die scientifically rather than just primitively. Surrounded by your family, chanting Hare Krishna, you can die scientifically. Just like my uncle, my aunt, had a bladder infection. Could have cured it by fasting for a day or two, but that was too barbaric, primitive. So they went to the hospital and they gave her some medicine, but the medicine had a counterindication, and so they had to give her another medicine, which also had a counterindication. So by the time she left her body, she had five doctors visiting her every day, and she had a glass full of medicines they were giving her. And finally, when she died scientifically, my uncle was very happy because she didn't die in a primitive way. She got the best care possible. And they sent him the bill. It was $1,200,000 to die scientifically. It's expensive. It's more... Generally, a day in a hospital is more expensive than a luxury hotel. Luckily, Medicaid paid for $1,000,000, so the people in America paid for the scientific death of my aunt. Victory. So the point is that actually, we can't avoid death, but we can elevate our consciousness so we don't have to die anymore. So we don't have to take another material body and go through the same problems again, uselessly. That is, the soul doesn't need the body, but the body doesn't exist without the soul. Therefore, the soul should wake up, and therefore he could actually exist in his actual glory, rather than seeking glory in something artificial, like a dead material body. So how to do that? The next verse says, Brahman yadiya karmani sangam tyaktva karotiya lipitena sapapena padma patram ivambasa. That one who performs his duty without attachment, surrendering the results unto the Supreme Lord, is unaffected by sinful reaction, just like the lotus leaf is untouched by the water. So while we're working in the material world, we should avoid sinful activities. We should act in the mode of goodness, but at the same time we have to become unattached to our material existence, in the sense that, not that we don't do anything about our material existence, we have to do something. We have to maintain this body and the bodies of others. But we tolerate the pains and pleasures of the material existence, at the same time try to cultivate a sense of Krishna consciousness. Happiness and distress in the material world are inevitable. Krishna says they come and go like seasonal changes. If you're in a big, happy state right now, it's not going to last forever. And if you're in a miserable state, it's not going to last forever either. It comes and goes like seasonal changes. But if we can, at the meantime, learn how to become Krishna conscious, then that's very good. From my own personal experience, one time I had a wart on my foot, right where the kidney point is. So it was really painful. So I went to the podiatrist, and he said, oh, I can take care of it. He gave me some medicine, didn't work. So then when I went back, he took out this needle, it was like this big. That was for the anesthesia. I thought it was going to go right through my foot. So he injected it, and it was so painful. I never experienced so much pain, right in one of the most sensitive parts in the body. And the only thing I could think of was to think of Prabhupada. So I was just meditating on Prabhupada, and then I forgot about the pain. And I never concentrated my mind more on Prabhupada than that moment. So he said, well, that was the greatest spiritual advancement I made so far. Luckily, the wart grew back again. So I had another chance for spiritual advance. Although it wasn't exactly the type I was looking forward to. But I went through it again, and I definitely concentrated my mind upon Prabhupada again. So what seems to be the most unfortunate situation, if we add Krishna consciousness to it, it becomes the most fortunate situation. If we're not attached to the idea that we can solve our problems, or our friends or our government can solve our problems, that the only one who could solve our problems is ourselves by concentrating our minds upon Krishna and performing the activities by which we'll be able to concentrate our minds upon Krishna. And if we become convinced of that, then no one will have to tell us, like I tell every lecture so far, this that we should have a daily program in our house. Chant Hare Krishna every day, not just on Sunday. We should hear Srimad Bhagavatam, as Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 13th chapter, under knowledge, that knowledge of nitya cha samachita ishta nishta paparishu, that detachment from wife, children, home, and the rest means that we don't give them up, but detachment means we engage ourselves in Krishna service. We sit down morning and evening with our wife and children, chant Hare Krishna together, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, and worship the deity. In that way, household life can never be perfectly happy. It can't be perfectly miserable either. But if we do that, then it's conducive to Krishna consciousness or developing, then household life will be a success. So there's no need to change. There's no need to change from household life to grihastha life, from grihastha life to sannyas life, because we've seen in our society, especially in the beginning, often devotees would be brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, then they become grihasthas, then sannyasis, and back to brahmacharis again, or grihasthas. So there's no need to change. One can remain in any situation, but add Krishna consciousness, add the process of putting Krishna in our heart, and then our lives will become successful. And we can make other people's lives successful too. If we have Krishna in our heart, and we're emanating even a little bit of Krishna consciousness, a little bit of enthusiasm, then people will become attracted. Just like we just had this Prabhupada marathon, and many devotees participated, I think around 180 or more, in different ways. But especially if those who went out and distributed books, they could see, as Prabhupada writes in one time, he wrote, that when people see the devotees, their enthusiasm, they become struck with wonder, and they want to purchase the book. Why do they want to purchase the book? Not because they know what's in the book, but there must be something in the book that made these devotees so enthusiastic, so blissful. So they want to find out what's in it. They used to think we were taking drugs, because otherwise, how can the people be so happy? They have nothing. They own nothing and they're happy. So they must be taking drugs. Or as one person wrote about a book, an actual book, about the strange sex life of the Hare Krishna movement, of the devotees in the Hare Krishna movement. And do you know what the strange sex life is about?
No sex life.
What's that?
No sex life.
Yeah, they're celibate. So that's really strange. In other words, we say we have sex life to produce children. People think, well, that's horrible. Or as Hari Griva once said, then why get married? Because the devotees are actually experiencing a higher taste, and therefore, those who are absorbed in Krishna consciousness, even a little bit, then material life seems quite far away. It's quite insignificant. That if one goes, absorbs himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness, even a little bit, then material life becomes less attractive. Just like if you're drowning in the ocean and someone comes and just lifts you up a fraction of an inch above the water, then you're safe. You may not be flying in the sky, but you're 1 inch above the water, and therefore you're no longer suffering of drowning in the material in the ocean. So if one lifts one a little bit out of the ocean material misery, a little bit engaged in Krishna consciousness, then one becomes greatly relieved and appreciate that this is the actual path to success in life. So that's our duties. Engage in Krishna service, engage in the hearing and chanting and the worship of the deities in our homes, and that way we'll become attractive to others. That they'll also take it. If they see that the devotees are happy in the process, they'll also take up the process. And if we talk about the process, we hear about the process, but we don't take to the process, then we'll just be like licking the bottle of honey. The honey's there, it's being described, people have testified that they've tasted it, and we can see it, but we're just like licking the bottle. We have to engage in it, open the bottle, get a little of the honey out of it, and then we can testify too to how sweet it is. And people will believe us. Okay, so I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
I would just like to ask for, because at the beginning when you said that it is very important to somehow or other get Krishna devotees in our hearts, so I would like to ask for some advice as what can we do in order to really invite Krishna and devotees to our hearts?
Well, the most expert person who can tell you that answer is Srila Prabhupada. And not only that, but he's written all these books to tell us the answer. So if we read the books, because it's a big answer, it's a long answer. We read the books, then the answer will come. Okay. Kuala Grantaraj, Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.